Hey there, fourth trimester listeners. Our program today is proudly sponsored by Family Album, your secure haven for sharing baby photos and videos. Head over to the App Store today, search Family Album, one word, download the app, and start creating a legacy of love, one photo at a time. Hi, I'm Sarah Trott, and welcome to the Fourth Trimester Podcast. I'm a new mama, and this podcast is all about postpartum care for the first few months following birth, the time period also known as the fourth trimester. My postpartum doula, Esther Gallagher, is my co-host. She's a mother, grandmother, perinatal educator, birth and postpartum care provider. Fourth trimester care, our topic, is about the practical, emotional, and social support parents and baby require. And importantly, it helps set the tone for the continuing journey of parenting. Hi, this is Sarah Trott, and welcome back to the Fourth Trimester Podcast. I'm here today with two special guests who I'll introduce in a moment. Today's topic is embracing empowerment, the transformative benefits of birth center birthing. We're going to talk about a framework of the main options for giving birth, and then compare and contrast those different options, really honing in on the birth center experience, defining what a birth center is, talking about why people choose to give birth at a birth center versus the alternatives, what it's like to give birth there, who is a good candidate for birth centers, how complications are handled, what kind of team is typically present for a birth in that scenario, and really how to learn more about birth centers and find more in your area. So today we have, as I said, two special guests. And before I go through their backgrounds, I want to quickly mention that we have a website, which is fourthtrimesterpodcast.com, where you can go and sign up for our newsletter so you can get new resources and information directly to your inbox. You can also go to wherever you listen to your podcasts and hit follow and subscribe so that you can be alerted every time we release a new episode. So I'm really excited about our topic today, and I have brought in two guests. Our first guest is Nancy Myrick. She knows how to help women and birthing people really get the most out of their birth experience at a birth center. She has decades of experience with births of every type, including running her own birth center. Nancy Myrick is a certified nurse midwife, and she's been the director of the San Francisco Birth Center since 2015. She has also practiced home birth midwifery since 2003 with rites of passage midwifery. And Nancy began births as a doula in 1993. She received her RN in 2000, and she completed her training in midwifery in 2003 through the UCSF Nurse Midwifery Education Program. So she's attended hundreds of births in homes, birth centers, and hospitals, and she believes that choice in childbirth is what helps parents begin that long path towards building great humans. Our second guest is Lita Bashi. She's a family photographer, a dear personal friend of mine, and she's also a mom who gave birth to both of her beautiful baby boys at Nancy's birth center. She's also a board member of the San Francisco Birth Center Foundation, and she has kindly agreed to join us today to share her experiences firsthand with us as part of our discussion today. So we are so honored to have you both on the program. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So the tradition that we have on this show is to start off by asking guests to share their stories about their own fourth trimester experience. So I would love to invite you, Lita, to start us off and share your story.
Yeah, so my story started with my firstborn in 2019. We came home just 6 hours after he was born in the birth center, and we had this magical, quiet time that you don't get in a hospital. And then the next few days, the midwives came and checked on us and weighed him and checked me. And it was just sort of this really cozy, amazing time at home. It felt really special. I never knew that I could be so hungry and had lots and lots of snacks. It was just such a shock to me, too, because I had been a nanny for so long and I really thought I knew what having a baby was like. And it was so much more than I could have ever imagined. And but the midwives were just so supportive and answered all my questions and were just, you know, there to check on me. So it was really, really special with my first one. And then my second one was kind of a different story, that we were in an Airbnb for our aftercare, which our house is under construction. I really wanted to have him at the birth center. So we had a We were in an Airbnb in a basement, and my mental health was not doing so great there, but they came and checked on me there. And then I ended up going up to my parents to be in the sunshine and out of the basement of the Airbnb. It was still really amazing care from the midwife team.
So it sounds like you received some in-home care, which made a big difference to you.
Oh yeah. It was so nice to not have to leave the house, especially, you know, my first one, we were on the third floor apartment, and like the idea of walking down all those stairs just to get in a car to go to the doctor. I was just so grateful that they just came to me.
Absolutely. And were there other resources or tips that you found particularly beneficial in your experience that you think could be useful for our listeners?
I think just the resting, and like there was one thing I think Nancy said was like, spend a week on your bed and a week near your bed. And you know, it's just like really just, you know, actually give yourself that time to really rest and recover and let people help you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And Nancy, you're also a parent.
I am. My baby is 26 years old now, so it's hard to think back all those years to my fourth trimester. But I would say, you know, my heart thinks back to it really with joy, but my brain does remember the exhaustion that I had as well. I was lucky to have my mother there supporting me in those first weeks, and that made all the difference in the world. And I also had a midwife that came by and checked on us. So that was really precious.
Yeah, beautiful. Isn't it amazing how it doesn't really matter how much time goes by, but some of these topics are so timeless?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So to help create a framework for our discussion, sort of broadly speaking, there are three main options for where to give birth. And I thought we could start off there so that everyone can get that framework settled in their mind. And I would love for you to speak to that a little bit, Nancy.
Sure. Well, I've attended births in hospitals and birth centers and home, and I think I can really speak to and understand the differences between those three locations and the care that you receive there. Hospitals, of course, are the best known. And I think the biggest benefit of hospitals are for people who either want or need interventions. And by wanting an intervention, they know they want an epidural, they know they want an induction, they know that there's, you know, that is the space that for them offers certain, you know, pain relief that they are clear that they want. Or the folks that are having complications where their pregnancy, their birth, their baby, or themselves will benefit from having an operating room, having a newborn ICU, having a surgeon on hand. So those are the people who, for whom hospitals are absolutely the right place. Birth centers and home birth, I think, have more in common with each other than they have with a hospital. So a lot of the benefits of these places are the same. They're typically centered on the client. The relationship that we build over time with our families lead the kind of care that we offer. And that's a sort of a different relationship than you get at a hospital. We are designed for natural childbirth. So there's no epidural, there's no anesthesiologist, there's no continuous monitoring. There are very few big machines that go beep. It is really designed for people who are hoping to have a labor and birth without medical intervention. Our rooms at the birth center are designed for natural childbirth, meaning they're spacious and there are the big birthing tubs and there's a yoga swing and there are yoga balls and mats and all kinds of different lighting to help you really have that soft, calm space that will benefit you during natural childbirth. And home is similar. It has, in addition, you. It is your nest that you built. And a lot of people, that's really the priority. Even if you live in a tiny apartment or a big mansion, it is the space that you are spend a lot of time in. And that is the leading draw, I think, for a lot of people to home birth. I think people who choose birth center over home birth are attracted to a couple of different things that we offer. One is a community that while there are community connections you can make in home birth, we have built into our prenatal and postpartum care opportunities to connect with and be with and get to know other families that are giving birth around the same time as you. The second thing I think is a space really designed for natural childbirth. And some folks sit in their home and feel like, I have roommates, I have neighbors. I really don't feel that comfortable sitting here and imagine giving birth here. I have three older kids that I don't want to be around when I'm laboring. And it just feels that getting into somebody else's home, which is kind of how we think of our birth center, is a better option for them.
Great. Thank you for that overview. I read some stats that in the United States, the vast majority of women are giving birth in hospitals, around 98.5%, with another 1% at home and then 0.5% in freestanding birth centers. And that's an interesting number because what I understand is that wasn't always the case.
It was not always the case. You go back 100 years and pretty much everybody was giving birth at home with midwives, and doctors came into the picture really as surgeons. And then about 100 years ago, there was a real move by the American Medical Association to pull birth into the hospital and into obstetric care. And initially it was for poor folks, that it's easier and faster to have 10 people in a wing together in labor than an individual going out to everybody's home. And at that point, the wealthy were having home births, and it was the poor folks that were giving birth in hospitals. There was a real campaign to paint midwives as dirty and foreign. And there's some great books that speak to this, where when you look at the evidence that midwives actually had incredibly great outcomes in birth. You know, fast forward to about 50 years ago, there were a couple of things that were going on culturally that reintroduced home birth to a lot of folks that hadn't heard about it for a while. And Ina May Gaskin, who wrote Spiritual Midwifery, was a big part of that movement toward natural childbirth, respecting the birth that is not intervened and really placing women at the center of the birthing experience rather than doctors or hospitals. In addition, there was this ongoing thread with the grand midwives of the South that were really exclusively African Americans, that kept the community birth, which is how we talk about birth center and home birth, kept the community birth standard, really, with amazing outcomes throughout the South.
Yeah, it's a really rich and fascinating history over time. Thank you for giving us that little bit of context and background around that, especially as now we're seeing a bit of an uptick and a trend towards more interest in home birth and birth centers as women are being reintroduced to the concept and starting to learn more about it. So we'll talk more about where people can go to find birth centers in their area kind of at the end. But I just want to ask, you know, if there's any other context you want to add to that part of the conversation. It really seems like there's hospital, there's home, and then there's the birth center, which is this in-between option. And there's been a bit of an uptick, I understand, more recently in women and families having interest and seeking out hospital alternatives.
I think that there's been a trend up over the last 10 years ago, but really hit a fevered pitch. Maybe that's a bad metaphor. Right at the beginning of COVID, suddenly people were perceiving of hospitals as dangerous places where they could get sick. It's sort of always been true, but really became evident when people were suddenly faced with going to a place where they knew COVID was rampant. And our numbers exploded, as did most home birth midwives that I spoke with, and really stayed high for a long time. Had a little drop lately, but I think it became understood that birth centers are safe, and especially it's always in comparison. And I think, you know, I want to just say that the evidence really supports that safety with or without COVID, that for what we know is that people who are healthy and having healthy pregnancies, who have an experienced provider with them and have a backup option of a hospital somewhere within 15 or 20 minutes, up to a half an hour, that birth center and home birth are really safe options.
Yeah. And I appreciate that at the outset, you've sort of made it clear that you've attended births in all settings and you support and are pro all settings, and it's really down to the individual and what's right for them. Yeah. So, Lita, I'd love to ask you a question around your personal experience, if you don't mind sharing. I'd love to understand more about what led you to choose a birth center and some of the highlights from your experience giving birth at one.
I had heard Nancy's name for years because I nannied for a number of families that she had been their home birth midwife. And so it was just sort of Nancy this, Nancy that. And I remember thinking it was crazy that they'd had home births. And I just didn't know, you know, anything about it. But I just remember thinking that is just, that's wild. And then as time went on, I was actually babysitting for a family that I used to be their nanny. And at 2 a.m, the mom came home and she said, "We're doing this amazing thing. I've got to tell you all about this birth center." And I'm sitting there going, "It's 2 a.m, but okay, I'll listen to you." And I was fascinated. I was like, "This sounds perfect. Like, I will squirrel that little bit of information away for when I need it." And then when I was expecting my first baby, my husband and I went to just the ultrasound confirmation check, and it was pretty dismal. And he said to me, "How do we never come back here again?" And I said, "Well, funny thing, I have us scheduled for this tour this evening of this birth center. And so come with me to that and we can see if that's the right thing for us and our family." And it just, the tour, it was just sort of like a meet and greet with the midwives, an explanation of the birth center's services. It was just a evening thing to see the birth center. And it was really, really great. And it was just like, this feels perfect. I don't want to have a home birth in my apartment that the neighbors are constantly complaining about the noise of the refrigerators downstairs. Like, the idea of having a baby there with, you know, I don't know, it didn't feel right. It felt, you know, like I was on the third floor. It just felt like kind of just the wrong place to have a baby. And the birth center just felt like the coziest, most inviting, amazing space. And the birth rooms are just so wonderful. I watched a video about having a tub birth when my mom was having my brother. So I was about 8. And that always really stuck with me as something that sounded really amazing, is to have a baby in the water. And they had these big, beautiful tubs. And that sounded, you know, it was just like, that was my dream of just like, this seems just perfect. And I had never been hospitalized. I had no idea what being inside a hospital was like, but it also just didn't seem like the right place for me. And I knew my body could do it. You know, like, I knew I could just have a baby and I didn't need, you know, a whole lot of intervention. I mean, I didn't know what I didn't know, but you know, it was just, you know, I just felt like that was the right place to start. And then we started having our group prenatal with our little cohort who, we just celebrated their 5th birthday this weekend with 5 out of the 7 boys from our birth cohort were all there. And like, that community just, and I'm jumping way ahead, but it just, you know, like, it's just, we grew this community out of that group prenatals. It was just so amazing to get to know these people who are all coming together to learn about having a baby, but it just is so much more than that. I don't remember where else to go from here, but that was sort of like, that was what drew me to it. And then it just continued to grow from there for me as like an amazing community, an amazing place, something that I want everybody who wants it to be able to experience.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your reasons for choosing a birth center. It sounds like you walked away with a community of other moms and families who were going through the same thing that you were at the same time.
Yeah, that community has been just incredible for me. We have a text group. We, you know, are constantly asking each other, you know, like, is your kid doing that? Is your kid doing this normal? You know, what's going on here? Why are they, you know, and then just, you know, like, meeting up and getting together. And then we've done a birthday party every single year for our cohort. It's just been so sweet and special. I don't know. I just feel so lucky to have those mamas at my fingertips.
Yeah. And that might not be something that people necessarily even consider or think about when they're thinking about where they should give birth. But what an awesome benefit coming out of it. In fact, it's reminding me, we have another episode that we recorded with Rebecca Walsh called The Mom Group Guide, where we really touch on the power of community and friendships amongst parents and moms. So if someone's more interested in diving into mom groups and they would like one and they don't have that built in, go check that episode out because we give practical tips on how to put one together. The other thing that I like about what you were highlighting, Lita, is that it sounds like you had a great continuity of care, meaning you had the same team prenatally and postnatally. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. It was the same group of midwives that I had done my checks and had done group prenatals with us and had done, you know, like we'd all were working together and had an appointment with, I think, everybody except for Nancy up until when I had my birth, but I was scheduled to have one. He just came 16 days early. But I'd seen Nancy there at the birth center and I'd known who she was. And so then when the time came, she was actually there helping me and I felt really, really safe with her. And just having that team was one of the most amazing experiences of my entire life. So, and I was just really glad she was there.
So thank you so much, Lita. That was really beautiful. And I love that you used words like safety and amazing. And you just had a really overall positive experience, it sounds like. So that's a beautiful sentiment. And Nancy, I'd love to know from your perspective, like what are some of the other things that women and birthing people say about why they choose a birth center versus the alternatives?
Yeah, when they initially choose our care, I think most folks are looking for a warmth that they're not getting from hospital practices. And by warmth, I mean a real heart connection. Our care is relationship-based. We spend a lot of time in our prenatal care. The majority of our visits are an hour long, and we really dive deep to get to know people. We believe that care is best when it is collaborative, not me telling people what to do, but really helping to educate them to make good decisions around their care. And that does not fit into the regular medical model. Insurance companies don't pay for that kind of care in the way they should. It means that by the time you get to the end of your pregnancy, we know you really well and you know us and how we work, and it makes birth go better. People feel safe and confident and comfortable in the care that we offer. It also really centers the pregnant person and the family rather than the hospital or the providers. Most of the things about the physical design of the space is how the person in labor can be the most comfortable and not around what works best for the hospital. Really feel that, I think, walking in the door. I think when people say what they're looking for from us, they often add, oh, I really want a water birth, or at least I want to labor in water. And we are the only facility in San Francisco that does offer water birth. You could have water birth at home as well, of course. We also are midwifery centered, meaning that the midwifery model of care is at the core of how we care for people, not the more interventive medical model. I would say that when we have our second timers come back to us, they say, oh, yeah, that was all great. But what I really loved was the postpartum care, because we spend a lot of time in people's homes in the first week postpartum. We go to their homes three times in the first week and assess the parent and assess the baby and work a lot on breastfeeding and answer a million questions that come up. We do that on the first day and then the third day and then again on the sixth day. And then we have two more visits back at the birth center at 2 weeks. And that care is really designed to get people off to a good start. I think because of it, we have sky high breastfeeding rates. Our breastfeeding rates are above 95%. And that means like at 3 months out, people who intended to breastfeed their baby are still breastfeeding, compared to a third to half that in hospital-based births. And I think that's just one metric that reflects the kind of care we offer in the postpartum.
And that's a really big difference compared to waiting typically 6 weeks is when someone would have their first checkup with their OBGYN post-birth. Obviously, in the hospital, they're going to get 24, 48, 72 hours, depending on the kind of birth they had. They're going to have that immediate postpartum care in the hospital. Usually, that will cover some degree of lactation consultant support, but I've also heard not necessarily in some cases.
It's a mixed bag, absolutely. And I think a lot of the questions that you have don't come up until you've left. that you've had all sort of people taking care of you and taking care of things. And then you walk out the door and you're like, is this rash normal? Really simple stuff that if you have somebody there to help take care of you, it's easy to answer those questions. But then parents go down into the deep rabbit holes of Google and start worrying, you know, that a normal newborn rash is some horrible illness. And the next thing you know, they're back in the emergency room concerned about this newborn rash.
Right. And then there's also for postpartum support, you know, my co-host on this program, Esther Gallagher, who's a postpartum doula, is often working with parents in their home postpartum and is also able to play a little bit of that voice, obviously not giving medical advice, but able to give lots of support immediately in between that postnatal, post-hospital period, and then that six-week checkup. But she's made the point as well how beneficial, and I've experienced this as well, having had a postpartum doula, how beneficial it can be to have that in-home care before 6 weeks. It's just such a long time.
It is a long time. And we are huge fans of doulas and postpartum doulas. And we are always excited when folks have a postpartum doula scheduled to support them as well and can work in close collaboration with them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Hey, fellow parents. Can we take a moment to reflect on the joyous chaos that is parenthood? You know those days when our hearts swell with love at the sight of our little ones and we're bursting at the seams to share every adorable moment with the world. But let's be real. Some things are better kept in the family. And your loved ones who matter the most aren't always close by, and they might not be that tech savvy either. So how can you easily share your baby's beautiful growth with loved ones while keeping your precious memories secure? I remember the frustration of trying to use some of the big tech photo solutions, only to find they fell short of what I needed. That's when I stumbled upon something truly remarkable, the Family Album app. The Family Album app was created to give parents a secure and easy way to share photos and videos with loved ones. It's an orderly and totally secure haven for your family's personal memories. I love that there's no third-party ads, no unwanted eyes, unlimited storage, and that it's totally free. So to all the parents who are out there still trying to use other messaging apps for your kids' photos, it's time to level up your family photo game with a free photo sharing app. Head over to the App Store today, search Family Album, one word, download the app, and start creating a legacy of love one photo at a time. So we've talked about this a little bit, but I'd love for you to describe just a typical birth center experience start to finish. So what would someone expect going in? And then we talked a lot about like the postpartum care as well, but how would you describe that to someone who has never heard about what the experience could be like?
Yeah, at the birth center, we really can take care of everything that the pregnant person and postpartum person needs, you know, unless a complication arises. So we can do the initial ultrasound and we can order all of the labs and do all of the prenatal visits along the way and order the genetic testing and order the anatomy scan. So all the care that you would get in an OB's office, we can do as well. But we do a lot more. A typical OB visit is maybe 15 minutes. Our typical visit is an hour. And that's really about this enrichment of the relationship and education. On top of that, we have our group prenatals, which are 8 sessions that are designed around education and community connection. And in those group prenatals, we cover all sorts of things. We talk about general pregnancy stuff, but we also go deep into nutrition and movement and exercise and emotional well-being. We have somebody come tell a birth story that gave birth at the birth center and talk about labor and birth. We talk about potential complications that might come up and how we manage things at the birth center and when we would go to the hospital and what might happen there. We talk about the postpartum, you know, how to prepare yourselves in your house and your freezer for the postpartum. We talk about newborn care. We talk about breastfeeding. And we close these groups out with really a conversation about the cliff everybody's about to jump off of into parenthood and how that feels and how to walk through that with grace and centeredness. And then, of course, the birth, which is, you know, when you go into labor, we welcome you to the birth center and really set you up in these rooms that are designed to be comfortable. And a lot of people go straight to the big birth tubs and spend the majority of their labor there. And when people arrive and get in the birth tub, the most consistent thing people say is, oh, that's so much better. It really is such a relief to be able to be immersed in warm water. And then when the baby is born, that baby comes out straight into your arms. And that next hour after the birth, we refer to it as the golden hour. And we try our best to keep it as calm and centered on this new family as we possibly can. That is the priority in that hour. You know, we don't have a pediatric team running in the door, and we don't have the, you know, the warming table across the room or the chaos that often is felt in that first hour after the baby's born. We are absolutely assessing the baby and making sure they're transitioning to life on the outside well, helping the person, you know, birth the placenta, making sure they're not bleeding too much. All of that safety stuff is built in. But really, the focus of the energy in the room is meeting this new little person on the outside. And then I think the postpartum care that we've already talked about is really integrated into this whole package. And really, even at 6 weeks, when we officially say goodbye to people, I'm not good at goodbyes. So every week I do a new parents group that folks come to and continue that conversation and continue those connections and community building.
And do people stay for a period of time? Like, how long do they stay after the actual birth happens at the birth center itself?
Yeah, about 4 to 6 hours. We make sure everybody is stable. We make sure that, you know, nursing is happening. We do a full newborn exam on the baby, and we make sure that the person who gave birth can get up and is stable and is able to go to the bathroom and everything is well. Of course, if there are any concerns, people stay longer. It's very funny, Sarah, first timers come in and I say, and you stay 4 to 6 hours after the birth. And they're like, oh my gosh, that's not very much time. And second timers come to us and I say, you stay 4 to 6 hours after the birth. They're like, oh, that's great. I can't wait to get home. So it's one of those things that experience reflects that that is a really great amount of time to make sure you're stable and everything is good, and then go home and sleep in your own bed and snuggle with your baby and practice breastfeeding. And then we literally are there the next day to answer questions and reassess everybody.
So another big point that's interesting about that experience is start to finish. There is also someone who's overseeing the entire event, and that's typically a midwife instead of an OBGYN. And I just didn't want to breeze over that point either. And it might be worth you taking a moment to explain what a midwife is.
Yeah, sounds great. So a midwife is an expert in normal birth. That is what our training was focused on. And that means knowing how to care for people who are having normal pregnancies and normal births, and also really knowing when it's not normal, hopefully how to nudge it back into normalcy, and if not, when to refer on. OBs are really surgeons. And while they do learn normal birth as a part of their education, the large majority of it is about managing complications. And they do a great job of that. I have many friends that are OBs that are fantastic, but they really look at birth through this lens of there's something here that's going to go wrong, and I really need to be prepared for that. Where I look at through birth, I look at birth through the lens of mostly this is normal and I need to be prepared in case it's not. It's a real different viewpoint that we come from. Some people ask as well, what's the difference between a midwife and a doula? A midwife is a medical professional. I went to midwifery school for 3 years. A doula training is typically 6 to 8 weeks and focuses on education and physical and emotional support during labor. They are not your primary medical provider, and a midwife is.
Right. That's a very important distinction. So to repeat that back, a midwife is a medical professional who has medical training.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the two terms that are more, or the roles that are somewhat interchangeable here are an OBGYN and a midwife.
Yeah. Interchangeable in the fact that they are the people who oversee the birth process.
Yeah. And then that kind of leads me to sort of the next question around what something you were saying, you were describing a quote unquote normal birth. You know, I'm interested in understanding what that is, if you could define normal birth and relate that to who may or may not be a good candidate for a birth center birth.
It's a tricky question. And I think it's really defined more by what it's not. Normal birth is varied. And I think that variation is sometimes lost. Really, for our purposes, a normal birth is something that falls within my skills and scope of practice. So some people say, oh, I'm 39 years old, I'm high risk. But really, a 39-year-old giving birth is within my scope, that the complications that are more likely to arise with the 39-year-old are still things that we're testing everybody for. So 39 doesn't mean you're high risk versus twins. Twins are a more complicated birth situation that I have very little training in. Like, I know if a second one happened to come out, I knew what to do, but that's really a twin's pregnancy has potential complications that are beyond my scope.
Okay. And then what does happen if there's an unforeseen complication for either the mom, birthing person, or the baby?
There are things that we are able to manage at the birth center. For example, we have 4 different medications and IV fluids if somebody does lose a lot of blood, and often we can just manage that at the birth center. We also are all trained in neonatal resuscitation. So if a baby comes out and needs a little extra help, we have oxygen and a bag of mask and this training to help the baby breathe. If things go beyond what we have the capacity to manage at the birth center, we are lucky enough to have great relationships with all the hospitals in town and happily transfer there. Of course, our bottom line is a healthy baby and a healthy parent, and that trumps everything else in the kind of care that we offer.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier, you gave some sort of high-level guidance around the timing. So if someone's, you know, in a short distance away from a hospital, then that acts as a safety net, so to speak, for something unforeseen that could come up.
Yeah. And we're quite lucky to be very close to multiple hospitals that we can get to easily and have very responsive emergency services. But I will say that most transfers are not emergent. It is pretty rare that we're calling an ambulance and going, even if we do have to transfer. Often it's something developing slowly over time. And we're looking at the picture and saying, you know, I have some concerns here. I think this baby would be better served with the pediatric team present. And we all get in our cars and go over to the hospital.
Are there any examples you would give to bring that to life?
Just had one yesterday. Lovely family came in and her bag of waters had opened and there was meconium in the amniotic fluid. And amniotic fluid that has meconium in it has a risk of causing respiratory distress in the baby. So we transfer for that. And she went into labor and went to the hospital and had a beautiful birth and the baby was fine. But if that baby had needed extra respiratory support, they would have been there where it was more available.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you for the example. So we have talked about this already, but like, who typically is the team who's present at a birth center birth? And do you recommend doulas be part of that team and why?
Typically at births at the birth center, there is the primary midwife who is someone that you've gotten to know in your pregnancy. And then we have a second person present, usually starting at the pushing stage, who is another trained licensed professional, a midwife or a nurse. And they are the folks taking care of you. In addition, we often have a student. We have a phenomenal student right now, Malia, who is that extra set of hands. And as for doulas, we love them. And that's both from personal experience and from the research. We know that births go better with doulas. And probably 3/4 of our folks have doulas at their birth. And we just really integrate them into our team.
And partners are often there too.
Good point, Lita. That was just our side, but usually partners are present, but also aunties and mamas and best friends. And, you know, there's a huge team that sometimes comes with the pregnant person.
Yeah. Is that something that is a difference that you'd compare and contrast to the home birth and hospital birth scenario?
I think that most places allow a decent sized team on the part of the family. I think some hospitals limit the number of people who can be there. I think we want everybody that is going to be additional support to that person in labor and really revel in the community around them and honoring them with the gift of watching this baby be born.
Yeah, great. And are there any other kind of big comparisons that we haven't touched on yet that we should talk about? Like, for example, pain management is often top of mind for a lot of first-time moms and birthing people around, hey, I know I want that epidural. Give me that epidural. We talk a lot about the concept of a birth plan and how actually on Fourth Trimester Podcast, we like to refer to it as the birth intentions. Because it implies a degree of flexibility in the expectation of the experience overall. Some people might think they don't want that kind of pain management, but they change their mind, and that's perfectly fine. So what are some of the practicalities around pain management that you might highlight?
Yeah, I totally respect the folks that know they want an epidural birth, and I completely understand that. Having had an epidural with my own, I understand that there is a time and a place for that. I think we live in a culture where we are kind of taught that we can't do it without an epidural, that birth is too painful to tolerate. And I know that that is not true. And I know that from having observed thousands of women have unmedicated birth. Lita being a great example of that. It is not just possible, but powerful. Epidurals are not required for birth. And I think I was speaking to a very former client. Her kids are now like in high school and college, reflecting back on her birth experience with me. And she says, for her whole life, through deep challenges that she's been through, through breast cancer, that she reflects back on her births and knows that she did that. She had a natural childbirth, that she can do this. And I think that power really imprints on us as parents.
Yeah, it sure does. It's such a life-changing experience becoming a parent. And the expectations of what that experience as it relates to birth is often a big part of the story and something that people will reflect on for the rest of their lives. Yeah.
And I want to be clear that, again, there is a time and a place for pain management. I do not begrudge it to people. In our population, which is a group of people who are going into birth with an expectation of having a natural childbirth, and they come in, you know, well prepared and well supported and well rested and well nourished, birth is usually manageable. But if something shifts, if you have 48 hours of a prodrome and you haven't slept or you've been vomiting and you're just depleted, man, there is nothing better at that point than a nap. And that's what you get the epidural for, is to sleep and hopefully wake up and push your baby out.
Yeah. And to be really explicit, epidurals are available in the hospital setting, and they're not available in a birth center or a home birth setting.
Exactly. Epidurals are complicated and require an anesthesiologist and lots of monitoring. So it's not something you can do outside of a hospital.
Yes. Okay. And then any other big comparisons you want to talk about that we haven't discussed yet?
I think that it's sort of a funny thing to say. It is size, that in a hospital, you're walking into a big institution that has lots of agendas. It has the provider and their, you know, the nursing system and the administrative system and the billing system. And there's just a lot of agendas going on that really have nothing to do with the contractions that you're having. A birth center and home birth, you know, I have my needs, but really it is a small group of agendas that are involved in you giving birth. It's a funny way of thinking about it, but I think what we don't know walking into the hospital is the kind of care that we receive there has a lot more to do with what's going on outside of the room than inside.
Yeah, thank you. That's a really interesting perspective in terms of size and the number of people who may be coming in. I mean, it's hard to predict, certainly.
Yeah.
Yes. And then also, if you're looking to learn more about birth centers and the different options, there are some resources you can use online to try to find one in your area. So we'll post links to those. I've found certainly the directory provided by the American Association of Birth Centers, and also Birth Center Equity, which is focused on community birth centers located in Black, Indigenous communities of color and provide safe and culturally relevant midwifery-led maternal care. So those are two directories and resources I would love to highlight. Are there others that you would mention, Nancy and Lita?
I think there's the Birth Lab, which is a group of researchers up in Canada that have really looked deeply about birth outcomes in various settings. And the American College of Nurse Midwives and the Midwives Alliance of North America have a lot of information on midwifery in general.
Okay, perfect. And then also, you know, we should probably mention ACOG also recommends and supports birth at birth centers. And obviously, any individual person is going to need to work with their doctor and their midwife to find out what's best for them as an individual, because everyone's needs are different, certainly. But we'll post links to all of these resources on the show notes. So thank you. We'll add those, Nancy. And then I wanted to invite you to share more a little bit about the San Francisco Birth Center specifically, which is your own birth center, and also the foundation.
Yeah, let's talk about the foundation, which I think Lita and I are super excited about. You know, the challenge of the kind of care I described is it's not accessible to everybody. It does not fit well into our healthcare system. And most specifically, it doesn't fit into our insurance system. The kind of care we believe in is this relationship care that we spend a lot of time together, but typically insurance companies pay the best for interventions, not face-to-face care. They don't really feel like it's necessary, and they'll pay for a 10-minute visit and then pay a lot for surgery. So in order to really offer this kind of care to a broad spectrum, we've recently converted to being a nonprofit and are raising funds to be able to offer this kind of care to everybody. The foundation is there really to meet this mission that we really believe in, and that is to advance accessible family-centered care for empowered birth and providing comprehensive resources for the midwives that support the journey to parenthood. I can't tell you how excited we are. We have this amazing board of directors, including Lita, who are out there trying to find ways to really make this a norm that's available to everybody. I don't know, Lita, did you want to say kind of what drew you into this?
Mostly the community aspect of it, I think, is just having such an amazing birth and community experience that it just feels like that should be available to anyone who wants it, regardless of their insurance or how much they have to pay for it. So it's been one of the best things that I've ever done, having a baby and at the birth center and being a part of that. So just being able to continue growing it and growing this nonprofit. It's just so wonderful.
Okay. Well, thank you both. This has been an incredibly informative discussion. I've loved hearing your firsthand stories from both of you. We're really honored to have you today as guests. For listeners who want to learn more about the SF Birth Center specifically, you can go to sfbirthcenter.com. And again, please go to fourthtrimesterpodcast.com, where you can learn more about all of the resources that we've mentioned on today's program. Thank you so much, Lita and Nancy.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
You can subscribe to this podcast in order to hear more from us. Thank you for listening, everyone, and I hope you'll join us next time on the Fourth Trimester. The theme music on this podcast was created by Sean Trott. Hear more at soundcloud.com/Sean Trott. Special thanks to my true loves, my husband Ben, daughter Penelope, and baby girl Evelyn. Don't forget to share the Fourth Trimester podcast with any new and expecting parents. I'm Sarah Trott. Goodbye for now.
Hello again, Bicycle Man. I know you're doing all that you can. I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I'll sing a song for you. You got your wheels, you got your gears. You ride around town without any fear. You got your pedals, you got your brakes. You always wear your helmet for safety's sake. Hello. Bicycle Man. I know you're doing all that you can. I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I sing a song for you. Hello again, Bicycle Man. I know you're doing the best that you can. I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I sing a song for you.